Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, 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 California does know how to party. There ain't no party like a West Coast party, because a West Coast party don't stop. What is going on, everybody? Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Octagon, hosted by yours truly. I am your host, Kalani Lua. Hope everyone had a good weekend, and hopefully your week is off to a great start. If not, hopefully some fight news will cheer you up a little bit. This past weekend, obviously, look, I know football is in full effect. Week 2 of the NFL, college football. Oh, man, I tell you, there were some really good games and interesting storylines this past week in the world of football. If you guys want to hear more about that and get a preview for the upcoming game, be sure to tune in this Thursday to the Sports Crib Podcast, hosted by yours, once again, myself, Mr. Kalani Lua, with my co-host Don on the OG Hayes and Mr. James King on the board. We're going to be talking all things sports on the Sports Crib Podcast this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So you guys come on back Thursday evening, Thursday Night Football, the Sports Crib Podcast. We've got everything you need right here. Now, you know, like I said, we do have some good fight news coming up as far as what happened this past weekend and then what's going on in the future. Real quick, before we get into the fight night cards and whatnot, let's talk about something else that happened to go on, and that is the fact that one, the American gangster, the OG himself, Mr. Chael P. Sonnen, is now back in the world of mixed martial arts. He is going to be suing an active fight career. Well, where will he do it? Most notably, he was in the UFC. That's where he made his name. So he had a top 4 or 5 matches. But Chael Sonnen, coming back, will be fighting for Bellator MMA. That's right. We can check out Chael Sonnen back in the cage on Spike TV for the Bellator promotion. And I got to tell you, I couldn't have thought of a better place for Chael Sonnen to end up for his mixed martial arts career as he continues it coming off of his suspension for failed drug test 2 years ago. Here's why I think Bellator is the best place for him coming up. Because if you look at Chael Sonnen, you know, he's in his mid-late 30s, okay? He's about 36, 37, maybe even a little bit older. He's at that point in stage of his career where being the elite-level fighter just isn't in the cards. If you look at what's offered in the UFC as far as how much money you can make, sponsorship is no more due to the Reebok deal for the uniforms. And look, let's be honest, some of Chael Sonnen's biggest adversaries are no longer at the top of their game. Sure, could he get a third fight with Anderson Silva? Okay, how would that sell considering he's 0-2 against the former champion, and Silva seems to be a bit on the downcline of a career himself. Then you look at the fact that you got someone like Michael Bisping, who he won, I'm talking about Sonnen here, a razor-thin decision over, but Bisping is a champion now. So the idea that Sonnen will be fighting for the title anytime soon, that's a bit unlikely. Vitor Belfort, okay, but, you know, how long is Vitor going to continue to stick around? Then there's always the issue of, well, is Vitor going to be able to make it? Vitor Belfort has been known in recent years to pull out a fight on the regular. But over in Bellator, he can go ahead and fight guys such as his rival, the man he was supposed to fight last in the UFC before the USADA testing came into play, and they both got suspended. Vanderlei, the axe murderer Silva. Who wouldn't want to see that fight? The rivals from the Ultimate Fighter Brazil, guys who clearly do not like each other. The attitude of Sonnen with his trash talk and his excellent work on the mic, as opposed to Vanderlei Silva, a very prideful Brazilian, does not like the fact that Sonnen bashed Anderson Silva and the Nogueira brothers when Sonnen was facing Silva. So he's like, hey, you not only did you disrespect guys from my country, but you disrespected my country. We got to solve that. That'll be an interesting fight. Also, he can fight one, Tito Ortiz. Tito Ortiz, a UFC Hall of Famer, former UFC light heavyweight champion, now over in Bellator. Who wouldn't want to see that? two of the best trash talkers on the mic. You know, Ortiz, obviously, his better days was in the early 2000s, but he can work the mic as well and promote a fight. Same with Sonnen, probably the best in the game. I know McGregor gives him a bit of a run, but Sonnen is probably the best in the game as far as promoting the fight and working the mic. Those two can go at it, two wrestlers. How about Rampage Jackson? Another good fight matchup right there. They don't like each other. Jackson is a knockout guy. He wants someone that's willing to fight. Sonnen wants to fight. Then you look at the idea that, you know, with Sonnen going over there, and he sent out a tweet throughout the weekend that said he's not fighting in a specific weight class. He's actually fighting in the gangster weight class, which basically is I'm here to fight big fights and I'm here to fight big names regardless of weight class. Interesting to say that considering Sonnen normally fights at 185 middleweight or 205 light heavyweight. Silva now down to 185. Would he fight a light heavyweight again? Sure. But Ortiz and Rampage are at light heavyweight. And then also another new Bellator member and a former UFC fighter, Roy McDonald. He even responded by saying, the gangster weight sounds good to me. Interesting. Could we see a possible Chael Sonnen versus Roy McDonald fight? That would be pretty awesome. Two of the biggest names that Bellator has brought on board in quite a while. Two former UFC adversaries, two guys who really were at the top of the UFC divisions during their time with the promotion. Now they're over in the rival company Bellator. That would be an interesting matchup. So for Chael Sonnen to be there with Bellator, I just think it's much better. He'll be able to fight more guys who are more so on his level of fighting as opposed to fighting some of the elite guys over in UFC. And that's not to say Bellator doesn't have elite fighters. Guys, do not get me wrong. I am not talking about that. But let's be honest. As I just said, Vanderlei Silva, Tito Ortiz, Rampage Jackson, those guys are great as far as name value, and they can still get in there and bang. But either one of those guys is going to really challenge Luke Rockhold, John Jones, Daniel Cormier, Chris Weidman for a championship in the UFC anytime soon? No, those days are behind him, and rightfully so. Father Time is undefeated. He'll beat everyone. It is just physics, right? Okay. Well, Chael Sonnen, is he going to be able to compete with guys like Jacare and Luke Rockhold and Weidman in the middleweight division over in the UFC? Nah. What if he goes up back up to 205? Yeah, he could go there. Is he going to be able to compete with guys such as Glover Teixeira, Alexander Gustafsson, Anthony Rumble Johnson? Scary. Would he be able to compete with those guys? Most likely not. So the best thing for both parties was for him to go to Bellator. Now, when Chael Sonnen does get back in the cage for an actual fight, that remains to be seen. But I got to tell you, I'm excited to see the American Gangster back in action. Can't wait to see who they're going to match him up against. And can't wait to see how he looks with this two-year layoff. Obviously, with him being suspended for the past 2 years for a failed drug test, and he kind of played it the right way. He did not try to deny. He did not try to play the Alex Rodriguez or the Roger Clemens card of I did not take anything. Nah, he basically said, I took everything that was humanly possible to get up there because I wanted to be the best. And for the most part, he really hasn't been looked at as the villain here. He really hasn't been looked at as someone, you know, the quote-unquote bad guy. And, you know, this brings me to the point of, do we want our athletes to just flat out admit, yes, I did cheat. I did say something. Yes, that was in my system. Do we want that? Think about it. Just think about the psychology here. If we have athletes, whether it's football players, baseball players, fighters, we look up to them, we enjoy watching them, we cheer for them or cheer against them. Do we want to hear that, yes, I hit 50 home runs because I was taking something? Yes, I threw the ball for 400 yards in five straight games because I was taking something. Yes, I just won the championship belt because I was taking something. Would we be able to accept that more and move on from there? I kind of think we would. Honestly, I kind of think we would. I think for the most part, if athletes of all genres did just say, hey, if I fail a drug test, that's because I was taking something, I think for the most part, people will be more forgiving quicker, and I think it would just play better for you as an athlete overall going forward. I mean, let's be honest here. Are we really that naive to think we're so perfect, you know, as everyday civilians? Are we really that naive to think that the average Joe has not done something that get him a little bit of an edge, whatever that may be? Running red lights, drinking and driving, cheating on your spouse, whatever it may be. You know, it's different, but at the same time, isn't cheating cheating? Isn't doing wrong? Two wrongs don't make a right. So I truly believe that if athletes would just come forward and just say, yeah, I did it, I'm owning up to it, I'm taking responsibility for it, I think they go better in the long haul as far as being forgiven by the general public, being accepted by your organization that you're in, and also being able to move forward with your career. And even if it's with a new start, again, Chael Sonnen was with the UFC, now he's with Bellator. Hey, that's not too bad. You're going to make a lot of money over in Bellator. You're going to be a ratings magnet. You're going to be able to bring, you're going to do a lot of media. And look, he still does his stuff as far as the podcast with the You're Welcome podcast. He does interviews. He did do some work with the ESPN. So, I mean, he set himself up pretty nicely here. And again, I think it's also because he just came flat out and just said, hey, raise my hand. I did it. I got caught. It is what it is, right? And just a little FYI fact here, do you know that the average steroid user isn't some bodybuilder, it isn't some fighter or some athlete? No. Your average Joe who's in his mid to late 30s has a good career job and likes to work out. Those are the average steroid users. Statistically, those are the guys who use it the most often. So before we start condemning these guys to, you know, some forbidden island and they can never be seen from or heard from ever again and we hate the fact that they cheated, just think, you know, Joe Schmo that works out at the gym, looks pretty fit, or, you know, John Doe at your job, you know, always coming in, a really pretty fit guy. Chance, statistics show, most likely, they've either taken or are currently taking something to maintain that physique. It is what it is. And real quick, speaking of bodybuilding, as I mentioned, as far as the steroid users, this past Saturday, we had Mr. Olympia, the Super Bowl of bodybuilding, the Mecca, really, and you had, once again, Phil the Gift Heath, winning his sixth straight Mr. Olympia bodybuilding title. He now ties Dorian Yates for third all-time on the most wins in Olympia history. At 36 years old, he certainly looks like he's on pace to next year tie Arnold Schwarzenegger with 7, and the year after tie Lee Haney and Ronnie Coleman at 8 with the most all-time. So kudos to Phil Heath on his victory and all the men and women from this past Olympia weekend out in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, for what they was able to do in the fitness industry. Say what you will, but we all would like to get fit in our lives, and these people are some of the best at it. So kudos to them. Now, getting into some fights here, and again, I just want, before I get into it, I want to thank you guys for tuning in to Inside the Octagon. You guys can find myself, Kalani Lua, on Twitter at KLua11. That's KLUA11. You guys can also follow my sports page on Facebook, All Things Sports. That is All Things Sports on Facebook. But this past weekend, we had a UFC fight night in Texas. Woohoo! Fuck 'em horns. And the main event was Michael Johnson taking on Dustin Poirier. Now, this really was going to be a fight that was, oh, man, this is going to be a good one. Yeah, Michael Johnson coming into this at 16-10, lost two in a row, two tough losses in a row. It was like, okay, it's do or die for Michael Johnson, someone who had a lot of promise in the UFC lightweight division, 155 pounds, and really just hasn't been able to take that next step going forward. You're losing two in a row. Really, if you're losing three in a row, that could potentially lead to you maybe being dismissed by the promotion. So Michael Johnson's back was against the wall. As far as Dustin Poirier, the young youth kid from Louisiana, he was on a 4-5 winning streak ever since losing to Conor McGregor back in 2014 and moving up to the lightweight division from 145 pounds to 155 pounds. He's ran through four guys, all finishes, all but one of them were finishes, and his one victory that went to decision against Joseph Duffy was complete domination. So he's looked like a completely different fighter in his new weight division. But, in this sport, of combat sports, whether it's MMA, whether it's boxing, there is something called a puncher's chance. And that is one of the beauties about combat sports. See, with football this past weekend, whether it was college or the pros, for the most part, we kind of knew who would win. Like, we knew the Patriots was going to beat the Dolphins. We knew that. We knew that the Steelers most likely will beat the Bengals. We just, you know, you look at the rosters, you look at how they're playing, the history of the rivalry, tough game, sure, but most likely the Steelers are going to be the team to win. Same thing in college football. Alabama's probably going to win. Even though they struggled against Ole Miss, Alabama looks like a different team this year. We knew that. Some of us knew Louisville was going to smash Florida State. Obviously, if you're a Seminole fan, maybe you didn't see it happening like that. But you know what I mean? Like in pro team sports, for the most part, you know who's going to win. In combat sports, you never know. Sure, you have your favorite, and sure, you say, hey, you know, this guy is going to blow this guy out of the water. And that is true to some degree at the championship level, but right there in the middle of the pack, guys who are ranked between a 4 and 10 spot or 4 and 12 spot, honestly, it's a who's who of picking them, really. And with Dustin Poirier taking on Michael Johnson, hey, a guy who's on a 4-fight win streak, a guy who's on a 2-fight losing streak, Michael Johnson, though, came in and landed a beautiful left-right combination on Poirier, putting him down and out in the first round. Michael Johnson snapped his 2-fight losing streak and gets a first-round KO victory over Poirier. And just like that, Poirier, who was really starting to put his name in the hunt for a possible future lightweight title bout, and when I say in the hunt, trust me, that's in the hunt with like 4, 5, 6 other names. That's how deep and set that division is. You guys who have listened to the show before know I said consistently the UFC lightweight 155-pound division, it is a murderer's row. It is the toughest, deepest, most stacked division in all of mixed martial arts. I don't know what it is, but the 155-pound guys, they just consistently, almost dating back to the early stages, early years of the UFC when BJ Penn and Jens Polver was going at it, they consistently have been a division that really has always had great talent. It is what it is. I wish I was back in my high school as a junior when I weighed 160 pounds. I tried to fight in that division. That's how tough, that's how awesome it is to be in that division. But now Poirier with his first round knockout really, really slams a break on his momentum. Look, he's still 4-1 in his last 5 fights at the new division. So it's not like it's totally bad, but a first-round finish like that, he fell down the ladder quite a bit there. So ranking-wise, he may not fall too much, but I certainly think that now he's really got to get things together in his next 2 or 3 fights to really show people this is just a slip-up. I got caught. Hey, when you fight a guy who's as good as Michael Johnson, anything can happen, and, well, this happened. As far as for Michael Johnson, you know, he got a lot of flack afterwards because, you know, he kind of showed up for you afterwards with his celebration, the money sign, and all this. And look, I love Deion Sanders. I love Terrell Owens. I love Chad Ochocinco. I love celebration. I think it is one of the things that makes sports great. It is honestly and truly an outburst of emotion. And I truly believe that anything you do, you put the hard work in, the training, to get better, and then you go out there and you execute and you finish it, you have the right to go out there and celebrate. You don't like me celebrating? Keep me out the end zone. Don't let me knock you out. Don't let me beat you. And it's so funny to hear fans, especially on the social media justice police, go out there and bash these athletes for celebrating. Yet, have you ever seen them at a softball game and when they score, hit a home run? You ever seen them at the local gym playing pickup basketball? These guys score when they're hitting layups in the warm-up line. Let them hit a nice single, standing double. See, these guys act like they just hit the home run in Game 7 of the World Series. So, the hypocrisy behind that double standard, it's amazing. But nonetheless, he drew some heat from guys such as a teammate of Dustin Poirier, Will Brooks, who is fighting this weekend. I'll get to that coming up. But Will Brooks took to social media and said, hey, after I beat Alex Oliveira, who's my opponent this weekend, I plan to fight you, Michael Johnson. You don't want to have any respect for the sport. You don't have any respect for my teammates. Got you. I'm going to come up and demolish you. Will Brooks, a former Bellator champion himself, now in the UFC. He's 1-0 in the promotion so far, going for his second victory this coming weekend. He wants a piece of the menace known as Michael Johnson. That'll be a pretty interesting matchup. Don't know if the UFC would want to book that right now, but it would be an interesting matchup. Will Brooks is a phenomenal fighter, very good wrestling base, and a very good striking ability as well. He's grown and grown over the years. Very tough guy. And I got to tell you, with Michael Johnson, as good as he is as an athlete, that'll be a pretty good matchup for him, because Will won't just come in as a stand-up guy. He will bring in his stand-up, mixing it with his grappling, his takedown, his clinch game. So it'll be nice to see how will Michael Johnson do against a more well-rounded fighter. And I don't know if well-rounded is more well-rounded, but someone who will fight with a more well-rounded game than someone like a Dustin Poirier. Poirier obviously wants to keep the fight standing. He's submitted guys before. I'm not saying he's not good on the ground, but let's be honest, Poirier is a stand-up guy, so it really fits Michael Johnson's forte of wanting to keep the fight standing. So Brooks and Johnson, if that fight can happen, that'll be a good one. That was the main event. In the co-main event, we had Derek Brunson, I guess you could say in some ways, upsetting one, Uriah Hall, with a first-round TKO finish. This one was pretty interesting amidst some controversy. Excuse me. There was some controversies here because you did have Uriah Hall get clipped by Brunson as he was moving backwards with the left hand, and then Brunson immediately swarms on him on the ground. And one thing about mixed martial arts that differs from boxing, look, you get stunned, there's no standing eight count, son. You get clipped and knocked down, boy, oh boy, you better be ready to defend yourself. When Brunson swarms in, some punches are landing when you're trying to, you know, ground and pound the guy, especially when you're trying to pounce on them as soon as they hit the ground. Some land, most of them don't. But if the fighter on the bottom doesn't look like he's defended himself, or it looks like he might have his hand up and he's trying to turn his head, but he's really not trying to advance his position, the referee can jump in and stop the fight. In this particular one, though, Uriah Hall was taking some punches, but then he puts his hands up. He tries to get from the mount position where Brunson was on top of him, almost in a straddled-like position, almost, and Uriah Hall was trying to turn to his side and then to his back and hoping to stand up. But as he was turning to his side and then got to a knee, Brunson, who's continuously throwing punches, Herb Dean steps right in and calls the fight. Hall immediately looks at the ref with his hands up as if to say, why did you stop the fight? And this is the hard part here when you're a referee. See, as couch warriors, as Monday morning quarterbacks, it's easy to sit there and look at a replay to say, hey, that guy was good. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't dazed or confused, or that guy was out. You should have stopped it. Blah, 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 blah. It's easy to do that. But when you're in the midst of it being right there in the middle of the action, it's hot and heavy, and it's real lifetime, it's very, you know, that split decision that you make is crucial. I dated back to last weekend, a few weekends ago, when Gennady Golovkin stopped one Kell Brook in the fifth round. Brooks corner throws in the towel. Now, many people didn't like the decision. Oh, what are you doing? Let the guy fight. But if you watch that fifth round, Brooke was almost out of it. I mean, I looked at it. Brooke was moving around, but towards the end, leading up to the finish, Brooke looked like he was really in. The lights was on, but nobody was home. And if they was home, they didn't know the light was on downstairs. They had went upstairs. They already brushed their teeth, used the bathroom, put their PJs on. They just get in the bed. He didn't know he left the kitchen light on. So, and then you come to find out that he has a broken eye socket. So now you're like, well, you know what? I get it. You know, you got to protect the fighter. And see, that's the thing in mixed martial arts, too, is that what comes first as a referee is fighter safety. You know, these guys are fighting with forearms, gloves. You get to use your elbow, your forearm. You just can't kick a down opponent in the head. But still, you know, knees, shins, feet, and you're standing up. You got to protect the guy. And the last thing you want to do is let it go on too long. But where do you draw the line? Do you wait for the guy to go limp, see his head bounce off the canvas, eyes roll to the back of his head, and say, okay, that's enough? Do you say, hey, look, you took 3-4 punches in a row, I got to step in there? What do? It's very, very hard. And, yes, there are times where a referee has given a fighter a chance to go a little bit longer, a little past the ground, the time where it looked like it should have been stopped, but no, they let it go on. And other times where a guy gets clipped, knocked down, and they jump in immediately. I believe it was on a Joey podcast, the Joey Diaz podcast, where he was talking to Big John McCarthy. And McCarthy was explaining how, as a referee, they have different ways of guys falling. You fall straight back, off to the side, to the front, or you collapse, just standing right there, and your knees just give out. Then, obviously, it's the amount of damage that you're taking. I believe because of how Uriah Hall got hit with that left hand and how he fell, you know, going backwards, I think that kind of, you know, that kind of got into Herb Dean's mind that he's really hurt. Because he took a clean shot. It wasn't like this was just a short, he barely nicked him, or Uriah Hall had his hand up and the force of the power and him moving backwards, he was just off balance. No, Uriah Hall legitimately got clipped here by Brunson. And I think that played into it, the fact that how hard he got hit, how he got hit, where he got hit, right down the chin, and then falling backwards the way that he did, I think that really just played into the referee saying, with you taking that hit and that fall, I'm already predetermined in my mind to say, I can only let you take 3, 4, or 5 punches next. If you don't show something immediately, I got to jump in, because generally, when a guy falls like that, you're out of it. Think about this. If I'm trying to paint the picture here for you guys. Listen, think of a fighter who gets hit and he falls face first, right? Face first, just flat out, boom. He's out of it, right? You already know there is no need for you to run in there as a fighter and try to put more damage on him. You can, because that is within the rules. Keep going until the referee stops you, but he's out of it, right? Now, what if you go backwards? We've seen time and time again, guys get knocked backwards and it's different levels. Some guys get knocked backwards like Nick Diaz did against Conor McGregor, and they're fine. They get knocked down, they're seeing, are you coming to the ground with me? Well, then I'm getting back up. You've seen other guys, like Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson 1. You get knocked out, real hit on the chin, going backwards, and you're out before you even hit the canvas. But then Dan Henderson comes in with a flying elbow. Okay, looking like Randy Macho Man Savage at WrestleMania 3. And then, bam, he hits you again when it was unnecessary. So it's a fine line as far as when you jump in as a ref. So, again, I just think how Derek Brunson landed his blow on Uriah Hall and how Uriah Hall fell back, Herb Dean already had in his mind that he was going to stop the fight if Uriah Hall did not show an immediate reaction as far as he's okay, show me some offense, show me some defense or whatever. I think that was already in his mind. So there was some criticism and some controversy behind it, but at the end of the day, it's all about fighter safety. Now, for Derek Brunson, this was good for him. Now he's on a 5-fight winning streak, and this is a fighter who really looks. He's coming on strong as of late, okay? As I said, you win 5 in a row, that is something. And he's moving up in the way that you would want to move up. They're not shooting him straight to the top just yet. They're not saying, okay, we're going to put you in a top 5 or in a top 3 or in a title shot just yet. No, we're going to take our time with you, and we're going to let you develop. And he's developed nicely. He went from being a wrestler in college to where now, from his strike 4 days, his striking has gotten a lot better. He's more confident in that. Broad shoulders, athletic dude, good reach. Hey, Brunson, if he continues this 5-5 winning streak, trust and believe, he could see himself in a title hunt probably mid to late next year. So middleweight division is pretty stacked as well, just like the lightweight division. But 5 in a row does get you someplace. So I'll be interested to see who his next opponent will be going forward for Derek Brunson. It could be the winner of Rashad Evans versus Tim Kennedy. That fight in November in Madison Square Garden. That would be a good one to see. But for Uriah Hall, I got to tell you, you talk about a roller coaster of a fighter. You talk about someone with so much promise. But he seems to just, again, he seems to be one of those guys. He, you know, always a bridesmaid, never the bride. And here's what I mean. On the UFC, the Ultimate Fighter, where Uriah Hall came from, Grahal had two of the most spectacular knockout KO finishes in the sport's history, let alone the show's history. A spinning back kick KO that sent the guy immediately to the hospital. Guy turned out to be okay. It was brutal. But it was one of the best highlights on the show's history, really in the sport's history. This guy looks like, oh, man, he's like a reincarnation of Anderson Silva. His striking is unbelievable. He's unorthodox, and he's got vicious kicks and good punches. And, oh, man, this guy's going to be the next thing. Then he started drinking his own Kool-Aid. And then he ends up losing the finale to Kevin Gastelum. Then from there, his UFC career is he starts off losing two in a row. From there, you're like, oh, boy, this guy may not stick around too long. But then he wins three in a row. Okay, maybe now he's finally starting to get it. Then he loses one. A close decision to Rafael Nadal. Close one is a split decision there, you know. But, again, he loses. Then he wins two in a row. One of them was a spectacular flying knee and punches TKO over Gegard Mousasi. Okay, this guy looking like he's putting it together. If for some reason he's lost his last two fights. A one-sided decision loss to Robert Whittaker, and then his first-round finish to Derek Brunson. And again, for Uriah Hall, this is just, once again, another example of he's not being consistent. He's not finding a way to take that next step and being an elite fighter. He's not showing the UFC that, hey, I'm ready for that next step. I'm ready for the big fights. They're giving him chances, and he's a spectacular fighter. But I don't know if it's a matter of him needing to change camp, if he needs to change his whole mindset about how he approaches fights. He'll look like the next Anderson Silva, one fight or two fights. And then he'll look like somebody who did not prepare for a fight at all or forgot he even had a fight coming up and just showed up there. He's that type of a fighter. Now, granted, when you lose first round, TKO from punches, yeah, you can look at it and say, well, you know, maybe this fight would have been different if he didn't get caught. Maybe he would have shown what he's been working on, yada, yada, yada. But, hey, at the end of the day, it's win or lose, buddy. You know what I mean? So it is what it is in that regard. For Uriah Hall, maybe he finally gets a shot at Anderson Silva. They were supposed to fight earlier this year on actually two separate occasions, but it didn't go through. With this loss, maybe they match up against the Spider to close out the year. That'll still be an interesting bout. Maybe they give him a lower-level middleweight next to see how he does, or maybe they give him another very tough middleweight, you know, got us in the top 15, and it's sink or swim for Uriah Hall. If he loses, does he get cut by the UFC? Maybe. But with his striking ability, you want to almost say, let's keep him around because you never know. Well, we're going to get a highlight reel finish from this guy. So, you know, we'll see how it turns out for Uriah Hall going forward. With this finish, it is a TKO. I didn't see the medical suspension list yet, so if he gets suspended for, you know, 60 days or whatever, he may not be able to make the quick turnaround to fight on the November 12th card at Madison Square Garden in New York where he's from. So I know he would like to fight that, or all fighters would like to fight there, but it would have been nice to have seen, you know, a New York native sitting there fighting from his hometown crowd. But if he can't, I think maybe he could come back at the end of the year in December. If not, look for Uriah Hall to come back possibly early 2017. Real quick on UFC 205, New York, Madison Square Garden, November 12th. Put it on your calendar. Two interesting tidbits from that card. Three, really, but again, you know, that's a couple months away. Got a lot of time to talk about it. But there is a rumor going around that in the main event, UFC lightweight champion Eddie Alvarez will be making his first title defense against none other than the notorious Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor, who at the beginning of this year wanted to make history and become the first UFC fighter to hold two belts simultaneously from two different divisions. He's a UFC featherweight champion, 145 pounds. He wanted to go after the lightweight championship, 155 pounds, after he beat Jose Aldo last December. He was looking to take on Rafael Dos Anjos, RDA, earlier this year. RDA had a bout, Nate Diaz steps in, which you know the story from there. But now, now that he's had his doubleheader with Nate Diaz, now it was just assumed that Conor McGregor will move back down to featherweight to defend his title against Jose Aldo, who's the interim champion of that division, unify the division title, and then go from there. But then it was also like, well, if he does that as far as defending his title, it might just be a one-time deal against Aldo, and then he moves up to 155, mainly because that is a serious, serious weight cut for Conor McGregor to go from. Conor McGregor, who's naturally a big featherweight, he cuts a lot closer, 30 pounds, to get down to 45. And if you see his weigh-in posters or pictures, he looks like Skeletor with tattoos. I mean, it is mind-boggling to see how this guy looks like literally the Walking Dead without the blood on him. He really looks bad and close to being sickening on there, on the scale. But he's made weight every time. He hasn't missed it, but it is pretty hard. He is a former lightweight contender in other organizations before coming to the UFC, so many just presume that him going to 155 will be a natural move eventually. But to take on Eddie Alvarez, the Philadelphia native, wrestler, striker, tough as nails, the way he ran through Rafael Dos Anjos, I mean, man, it will be an interesting matchup. And if that match does get announced, can't wait to get into it and break that down for you guys. So be sure to stay tuned in weekly to the show Inside the Octagon, Monday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, for your updates on that. Obviously, you know, if a week goes by, you might have heard about it. That's why you guys should follow me on Twitter, KLUA11, KLUA11, or on Facebook at All Things Sports. That way you get daily updates. But that's one caveat from that card. Two, you got former UFC middleweight champion Chris Weidman, the New York native himself, making his comeback to the cage after being gone for, what, a year, really? Yeah, he's been gone for over a year. It wouldn't be a year. It'd be close to a year. Last he fought was last December when he lost the title to Luke Rockhold, lost his middleweight championship to Luke Rockhold. He's making his return to the cage to take on a former Olympic wrestling medalist, Yoel Romero, who's making his return back to the cage after being suspended for taking a substance, but then it wasn't known to him that he took the substance because it wasn't listed on what he was taking. You know, imagine if you get, imagine if you're a person that doesn't eat pork. I mean, like a Muslim or just someone who literally does not eat pork for some reason. I don't know what the hell is wrong with you. Maybe you need to get your mind checked out or whatever. But if you don't eat pork, something is definitely wrong with you mentally. But be that as it may, let's say you don't eat pork. But let's say you eat something that has pork in it, like Yellow 7 or Red 6, you know, something like that. And you're that serious about not eating pork. Or it does have pork in it. You know, maybe it's fried pork meat mixed in with the pasta that you're having. But you don't know. You eat it. Now all of a sudden it's in your system. You get sick from it. And you're wondering, what did I get? Was it the pasta salad? Was it the Jell-O? Well, if it was Jell-O, you got to ask who made it. Was it Bill Cosby? You never know. Hey, maybe too soon, but oh well. But you go in there and you say, okay, that happened. Well, that's basically what happened to Yoel Romero. He took a substance that had he took some supplements that had a substance in there that was not listed on his supplements. So he looked at the ingredients, what it's made with. It didn't have anything illegal in it, but he has popped anyways. He had a minor suspension. He'll be coming back. Weidman, Romero, that is going to be an excellent bout. Two very good wrestlers, two very hard-hitting strikers. That is going to be a very good matchup, and clearly that could be your number one contender's bout for your next middleweight championship going forward. Although there's another bout, Luke Rockhold versus Jacare. That in itself could be, really, out of those two matchups, Rockhold versus Jacare or Weidman versus Romero, whoever has the better showing and is healthy after their fight, they're probably going to be the number one contender for the winner of Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson next month. So that's going to be an interesting fight, Weidman, Romero, in the Garden. So that's going to be a good one. The third caveat that I wanted to bring up about this fight card was the idea that Al Alaquenta, he's a UFC contender in the lightweight division. He's a New York native. He's a very good fighter, but he's been out for about a year and a half recovering from a serious knee injury. But he signed to fight. Well, yeah, he agreed to fight Thiago Alves at UFC New York, November 12th, okay? He agreed to fight there. Fights in front of his hometown. It's in his backyard, friends, family, the whole shebang. verbally he agreed to it, but he didn't sign the contract, and he pulled out of it because the contract just wasn't adding up. Here's the quick story. Because he's been gone for a year and a half, you got to realize, in the UFC, and really the same will be in boxing, if you're not one of the top guys, you know, the champion, or just one of the big names in the sport, your pay is not what many people think it is, you know, especially in the UFC, a sport that's only been around for 20 years, not that long. These guys aren't making as much as you would think. So when you're gone for 18 months, it's very, very hard for you to be able to pull in those dollars, especially now that the UFC has had this Reebok deal where it really eliminates sponsorship from the fighters. So for the past 18 months, you know, Alex Quinta states that, hey, he's had to, like, dig into his savings to be able to hold his family afloat while he's been recovering from this injury. And because you don't have the sponsors, you can't do all these sponsor meet and greets or these sponsor appearances because, you know, most sponsors just look at it and say, hey, look, if you can't wear our gear, you know, on stage, in interviews, at the weigh-ins, walking to the fight, or have the banner up, or wear a T-shirt after your fight, what's the point of sponsoring you? So they pull sponsorships. So past 18 months, you know, he hasn't had a sponsorship and he hasn't had any fights. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, he had to do what most fighters had to do. He had to scrap to get by. And now he's looking at it and saying, well, with the money you guys are going to pay me, I need something a little bit more because I really need to not only get my family back in the black, but I really need to get us in a position where until my next fight, what if I get injured again? Until my next fight, we'll still remain in the black. So, you know, it's very unfortunate. And what's bad for him is that when he re-signed with the UFC, he signed a 4-fight deal with the UFC. He's 1 fight into that deal now. He signed it before the Reebok deal went into play. And this is really what's keeping George St. Pierre from returning to the UFC, is that before he signed with the before the Reebok deal went into place, that's when he signed. So he was getting his sponsorship dollars and whatnot for all of his fights. So he was making money. Where he's at right now, as far as the fighter pay structure goes with the Reebok deal, he will only make $5,000 total as far as from sponsorship, you know, from Reebok. Then obviously, you know, your fighter pay, your win bonus. But I believe his win bonus is gone due to some other fractions that he's had as far as not making certain appearances for the UFC in the past. So he wouldn't even qualify for a fight bonus. So really, he would just get his fighter pay and a win bonus. Well, with that, on top of the $5K that he's making from there, it's just not enough. That's about 50. Excuse me. But I wish I had a mute button over here where you guys have to hear me burp, but it is what it is. But he'll make about 50K for his fight, and I know 50K sounds like a pretty good chunk of money for most of us, it is. But, you know, for these fighters who this is their livelihood, this is what they live by, you know, you got to think, what if you're behind on bills? What if you're behind on payments? Then you got to pay your coaches. Then you got to pay your trainers. Then you got to pay your sparring partners. Then you got to pay bills this month, then the next month. And you got to remember, these guys don't fight. You know, he didn't fight for 18 months. What if he gets injured? Can't fight for 6 months because he gets a serious nasty cut over his eye. He's got to let that heal. That's 6 months of not fighting. 50K goes by really, really quick. So, you know, he claims, hey, I made 5K just for one sponsor in my last fight, let alone altogether. So it is unfortunate, but a big name, a New York native on the card, will not be fighting at UFC 205 due to contract fractions. We'll see if the UFC can work something out with these fighters because fighters' pay is something that is atrocious in the world of MMA if you're not one of the elite champions there. So we'll see if things turn around. Most likely not, because as they say, the show must go on. They already have a replacement. Jim Miller will be stepping in to take on Thiago Alves at UFC 205 in New York. That in itself would be a good fight. Miller is an excellent fighter, very exciting guy to watch. So him versus Alves, who's making his lightweight debut, that would be a good matchup. Now, that is in November. But as I said last week and the week before, these next couple of weeks, the UFC has fight card after fight card after fight card. And this coming Saturday, after you guys watch college football, be sure to tune in to Fox Sports 1 because coming to you from Brazil, beautiful beaches, you will be seeing the return of the baddest woman on the planet, the best female mixed martial artist in the world and of all time, Christina Cyborg Santos. That's an ex-husband name. I do apologize for that. Christina Justino, a.k.a. Cyborg. And man, oh man, you talk about a woman who is nasty, who is bad, who is tough. You're talking about a woman who is 16-1, and her one loss was the first one of her career. So she has won 16 in a row, 14 knockouts. She's making her second appearance in the UFC, again, at a catchweight bout of 140 pounds, fights at 145. The UFC only has a 135 women's division. Well, they got the 115, but as far as, you know, going the higher weights, it only goes up to 135. So she will be taking on a catchweight bout. Her opponent will be Lena Landsberg, a UFC newcomer, but no slouch at all. She is 6-1 in her UFC career with 4 finishes. So this is a striker who is going to be coming in. And granted, it is her first UFC fight, so it'll be interesting to see how her nerves is fight in the main event against the baddest woman in the world on the big stage in the UFC in Brazil, of all places, the Cyborg backyard. But Cyborg, who for the longest time, obviously was considered the baddest woman on the planet when she defeated Gina Carano in Strikeforce, really took a knock when she fell a drug test in 2011. But ever since then, she has been on a tear in Invicta, and her one stand in the UFC where she took out Leslie Smith in the first round. But she, for the longest time, has been lobbying for a fight, not only in the UFC, but against the best women in the UFC. And again, because the UFC doesn't have a 145-pound women's division, one in which Dana White, the president, did say, once again, most likely they wouldn't add a 45-pound women's division, only because, in looking at it, that division isn't as stacked with as much talent there as they would like. What's interesting about that is, for the longest time, many people thought that the women's 135-pound division wasn't that competitive because Ronda Rousey was sweeping through everyone. But now that Rousey has lost, lost to Holly Holm, Misha Tate defeated Holly Holm, Amanda Nunes defeated Holly Holm, Juliana Pena's looking good, Castellano's looking good. Look, now you're looking at it and saying, wow, this division is actually 3, 4, 5 fighters deep. And that's just at the top. You still have other really good fighters coming up. So, look, there's a lot of good women out there fighting in mixed martial arts. And I know with Cyborg as a champion and really not meeting anyone to her equal, I mean, it's unfortunate, but, I mean, it is what it is right now. But that division probably will get better as time goes on and more women get involved in the sport. But you also got to remember, you know, 145, that is a big weight class for female fighters. Not to be sexist, not to be any of that, but, I mean, it just is what it is. You don't see that many big women out there being elite fighters. It's just not the case. For Cyborg, though, she is a different animal. I mean, for the most part, I really don't think in a mixed martial art bout or even in a boxing match, I don't really think there's like really any woman who could beat a man who's on their level as far as the same amount of experience. Just as far as the muscle structure and everything, I will say this: when it comes to Cyborg, she's got a chance, and I'm not saying that to be caught up in the moment. I'm being for real. She is one of the hardest hitters in the world. She is aggressive, and she is trained with some of the baddest fighters in the world. And I'm not just talking females, males as well, training down there with the Brazilian guys such as Vanderlei Silva, Shogun, training out in Kings MMA with Fabricio Verdum, Rafael dos Anjos, also training with Tito Ortiz and Team Punishment, training with professional boxers and wrestlers, black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, this woman is truly a bad mamma jamma. Now, to get off the whole woman versus man thing, because, you know, that could go down a slippery slope there. She's taking on a woman in Lena Landsberg, you know, like just like Leslie Smith. Is it feeding a sheep to the wolves? Yes. But who's going to fight her? You know, it's the other women, such as Misha Tate, Castellano, Holly Holm, and several other. If the other women in the UFC at 135 pounds are not willing to step up and sign a fight to fight Cyborg at 140, what's she supposed to do? And people say, well, she should just make 135. Again, it is tough cutting weight. I challenge anyone out there, try to cut 10 pounds, try to cut 5 pounds. It is tough. In fact, try to cut 15 pounds and then cut 5 more. It is tough. And I know a lot of people will say, and I've seen this online because Cyborg did have a documentary out where it was showing her road to the octagon the first time, and it was detailing her training, her workouts and everything, her weight cutting. And in part of the video, it showed where when she was cutting weight, she was actually crying, you know, starving, dehydrated, your body is just shutting down. And there was a part where she was crying, and really, you know, it was sad to look at. It was hard to look at. And you just see the sacrifice, dedication, and what these fighters really go through. But typical human nature response. You get a lot of assholes who respond by saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry for her. She's a drug addict, or she's a drug user. She's a cheater." One, I ask you this: it was 2011. It's 2016. How long do we hold that over someone's head? Is it forever? Is it a 2-year limit? 5, 10, 15-year limit? I mean, she has fought in the UFC and passed the drug test, and she's fought in the States, and she's passed every test since then. She served, she did a crime, she served her time, now she's doing right. When do we let that go? I just wonder. But then also, you say, well, you shouldn't get so big in the off season, and you should monitor what you're doing. Yeah, that's true, but you also got to realize a lot of people just have natural bone structure or natural body size, that whether they're dieting or whether they're exercising, that's generally where they're going to be at on a regular basis. It's just physics. You know, if you're someone like LeBron James, you can easily say, well, LeBron, you're 6'8", 270 pounds, but if your joints start hurting, why don't you cut 20 pounds and just remain at that? Yeah, I could cut the 20 pounds, but my body size is naturally that big. So not only would I have to diet for the entire year, which, let's be honest, that is not easy to do, but it's also tough on your immune system and your metabolism and your overall body itself, because on your organs, because trying to diet, here's the thing about people who like lose weight. They lose weight, and they're like, well, people lose weight. They go from 300 pounds to 200 pounds, 400 pounds to to 190 pounds, and they keep it off. Yes, they do. But you also got to realize these are also not people who are physically pushing their bodies to the limit in a physical sport day in and day out for a career. It's much different when, you know, your job is a technician or a computer repair person. It's much different because you can allow your body to adjust and get used to the weight change, the body change. But when you're a fighter or an athlete and you're out there pushing yourself, working out, striking, lifting weights, your body's going to go to what it naturally is, which is, hey, I'm going to get bigger. I'm going to get back to my size. So if she was to alter her whole lifestyle, she might suffer her performance in the cage. And as an athlete, you never want to suffer in what your profession is. So for all the people who want to jump to that side of the argument, again, it's not as easy as it sounds. It's really not. So be that as it may, Cyborg back in the UFC. I can't wait. I love it. She's my favorite female fighter to watch. One of my favorite fighters overall. She's pretty good eye candy, too. You know, so I know some people don't like it, but it is what it is, right? But she's bad. She's in the main event, rocking and rolling. That's going to be a very good fight. If you don't see any other fights this weekend, please be sure to tune in to Fox Sports 1 to watch Cyborg taking on Lena Landsberg. Also on the card, we have former UFC bantamweight champion, bantamweight being 135 pounds, Rene Barrio taking on Felipe Nover. That's going to be an interesting one. This is going to be at 145 pounds. Barrio moving up from 135 to 145. He was another guy who was struggling to get down to 135, finally moved up to 10 pounds. Wasn't successful in his last time in his debut of 145 and lost to Jeremy Stephens, but looking to bounce back again in his native of Brazil. That should be interesting. Also on the card, another native, Bigfoot Antonio Silva, will be taking on Big Country Roy Nelson. Two heavyweights, two hard punchers. Roy Nelson, probably the second hardest puncher in the heavyweight division behind Mark Hunt. That right hand is a cannon. And he's going to be taking on someone who has been known to be knocked out quite a bit in his career in Bigfoot Silva. This could be a good fight, but it can also be over early if Roy Nelson can land that right hand. So you guys be sure to check that out. UFC Fight Night on Fox Sports 1 this Saturday. Cyborg versus Lamborg, Barrio versus Nova, Nelson versus Silva. That's going to be a good one. Real quick, as I'm wrapping up the show here, again, guys, tune in to Inside the Octagon every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to hear your MMA news, combat sports news, and whatnot. Also, on Thursday, be sure to tune in to the Sports Crib podcast from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We talk basketball, football, college and pros. Hell, we really don't talk boxing on it because, you know, we do another show for boxing as well. But if it's big news, we get into it there. We really, you know, baseball, we really try to talk about whatever's going on in sports, but mainly the three big sports categories, basketball, football, baseball, is what we cover on there. So, again, Sports Crib Podcast, Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Also, be sure to follow myself, Kalani, on Twitter at KLUA11. That is KLUA11 on Twitter. And then be sure to go to Facebook. Be sure to type in All Things Sports in the search. Click on it. Hit the like and follow my sports page. That is All Things Sports on Facebook. Guys, I got to tell you, this show is tremendous. You guys are making it awesome. I tune in weekly and tune in to the podcast throughout the week. So I ask that you continue to do so, and I thank you for doing so. To my man, James King, congratulations to the Steelers on getting the victory this weekend. Fortunately, you know, it was my Raiders couldn't bring it home. But, you know, it was a close game that we lost to Atlanta. It is what it is. But, folks, real quick, before I close it out here for the show, you know, you got the entire week coming up. I ask this. Do something for somebody else out of the goodness of your heart. And don't have to be money-wise, but just do something. Talk to somebody that you haven't talked to in a long time. Have a real conversation with them, not just text them. Help somebody who maybe needs help, whether it's moving a couch, doesn't have any food. You know, you take them to McDonald's or to the gas station, get them something to eat. Be there to help somebody. We're coming up on the holidays right now. It's going to start getting cold all around the nation and everything. People are going to need clothes. They're going to need jackets. They're going to need blankets. So if you have any old clothes or any blankets or anything that you're not using in your house, look, I know times are tough for everybody, but imagine those who don't have anything. Be sure to dig deep into your heart because it's human nature that we want to help one another. Be sure to try to get rid of some of your old clothes, some of your old blankets, some of your old pillows that you don't use anymore. Go ahead, donate those to a charity, donate those to a homeless shelter, donate those to an organization or to a place that can help those in dire need. Holidays coming up, the worst thing that you could do is see people without family, without a throne, and they don't have anything. And I know, you know, I get it. A lot of times people choose that lifestyle or choose the things that put them there. But we're all flawed, we're all humans, we all make bad decisions from time to time. Sometimes they're bigger than others. So try to help somebody out. So that's my message for the week. I'll jump off the soapbox there. And once again, thank you guys for tuning in to Inside the Octagon. Be sure to tune in Thursday, Sports Prayer Podcast, Twitter, Facebook. Go ahead, holler at me on there. And boy, oh boy, again, I cannot wait. We have UFC Fight Night this weekend. We got UFC 204 in England in October, 205 in New York, and then we got 207 in December. Guys, to end this year, the UFC is putting on some great fights. And real quick, big up to Canelo Alvarez for his victory this weekend in a boxing match over Leon Smith. Congratulations. Has a fractured right hand, a fractured right or left hand. I couldn't tell from the picture because it was reversed, so it might have been his left. But they say, I believe it was his right hand. So he's done for the rest of the year. I say this, Canelo Alvarez, you need to fight Triple G Gennady Golovkin. You talk all this stuff about how Mexican fighters don't run, but we don't F around and everything. Stop effing around. You and De La Hoya, stop playing. Give us the fight we all waited for, and the fight that all the fans want to see. You guys, thank you again for tuning in. Until next week, have a good evening. Good week. Enjoy the weekend. I'll see you guys right back here next Monday on Inside the Octagon. Take care. Peace.
welcome everybody.